This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Despite unrelenting state repression, there have been rumblings of renewed labor organizing in Iran. While the most visible activities are those of the Bus Union of Tehran, the Sugar Workers and Teachers Union, there's a good deal of spontaneous worker protest that do not lead to any permanent organization. The current recession is ratcheting up labor protests, and the plan of the Ahmadinejad government in March to do away with all subsidies enjoyed by the population will increase prices to consumers and produce huge layoffs, which may lead to a period of mass labor unrest. So will there be a new wave of unionization in Iran? We talk with Humayun Pourzad, Central Council member of the Network of Iranian Labor Unions.
I want to begin by the fact that we are speaking to you in very close proximity to the observance of the revolution that overthrew the Shah of Iran. And one of the things I'm most interested in is how you characterize the protest that has ensued in Iran since Ashura, where there were purported to be at least 10 or 11 people killed. Is it a civil rights movement? Is it a embryonic revolutionary movement against the Islamic State?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as revolutionary movement. It's a movement to regain what has been lost in the last 30 years, the move away from the first demands of people who participated in that revolution, which was an end to all forms of dictatorship and true kind of sovereignty for the people. In other words, people should have a right to assemble, they should have a right to free speech, should have a right to practice the religion or lack of, and the kind of stuff that many people take for granted in the rest of the world. These have been trampled for many, many years. So here is this more or less spontaneous movement to go back to those demands and try to make a democratic formula out of this, not exactly the same one that was around 30 years ago, but to look for something that fits today's world in the Middle Eastern context.
How does the repression overall in Iran today, how does that impact on labor unions?
Well, it impacts quite significantly because the Iranian regime frowns upon any form of unionization, any form of independent labor organization of any kind. And in fact, they treat labor organizers quite severely. They're thrown into jail, into solitary confinement. Many labor leaders are in jail for several years. People are fired from their jobs because they've expressed interest in joining unions. And generally, they use iron fist when it comes to organized labor movement in Iran.
Most of us are somewhat aware of repression against women's groups, repression against certainly journalists and cultural workers at this time, but I think we have little to no information about how workers have structured themselves and what it means to be organized labor in the context of Iran. So perhaps you can give us a little bit more of a history and a chronology and just a characterization of how labor does organize itself. What is the working class about?
Sure. Let me give you a brief background. First of all, Iran has a pretty solid industrial base, contrary to what many people think. First factories were built in the middle of 19th century, and the labor movement is almost 100 years old. In terms of organized labor, which is, you know, a little different from just labor movement, because this is where workers have more power and more bargaining power. There have been three major waves for that. The first one was after World War II. The second one was at the time of the revolution, and now we're in the third wave of unionization. This doesn't mean, I mean, the fact that unions are repressed and therefore they cannot grow, you know, in big ways this doesn't imply that there is no labor movement. You have hundreds of labor actions every week all over the country. This could be work stoppages by workers. This could be slowdowns, could be strikes. It could be petitions made. All forms of labor action goes on all the time. And, well, of course, that's different from what would be the organized part of a labor movement, in that this organization would have a staying power and they would stick around after a certain economic fight. Whereas today in Iran, you could more or less, if you play by the rules, organize yourself in a factory, let's say, with issue-specific framework. So you may want to organize the workforce, let's say, for better working conditions. But once that battle is finished, you can continue organizing. That throw you in jail. So this is what we're trying to change. We're trying to have solid working class trade unions, as you have in this country and most other civilized countries in the world.
You mentioned if you stick by the rules, so to speak. Are these formations legal? Is there a labor code in Iran?
Again, as far as labor, independent labor organizations, they are strictly illegal. The government looks at trade unions as subversive groups, like as if they're terrorists or something. But for day-to-day labor actions, you know, for labor grievances, for labor strikes, things like that, there are laws and there are certain guarantees in the Constitution which are, if workers know how to play by the rules, they could be used for the workers. You know, you should know what your rights are, and you may have a sympathetic judge, let's say. So there's a lot of nuances involved. It's quite a very kind of extensive political fight that's going on. I mean, you're dealing with thousands and maybe tens of thousands of units where workers are using these laws. They're sometimes winning, sometimes losing.
Let's put a little bit of flesh on these bones. Can you very, very briefly tell us about one or two labor struggles in Iran that would illustrate what you've been talking about?
Okay, again, as I said, there are two ways of looking at labor movement. One would be the organized labor, the other one would be the spontaneous struggles. So I give you examples for both of them. As far as the spontaneous ones, we, for example, have seen just last few days several activities and in factories where workers went on strike for better living conditions, or usually the demands these days are for back pays because there's a recession going on and the employers or the government, which is the biggest employer in Iran, just doesn't pay the workers on time. You could go on for months without being paid. So there have been several actions like that all over the country, at least a dozen in the last 2 weeks. But as far as the organized labor component of this, we have three major unions in Iran that have been suppressed, actually. We have the bus drivers, we have the sugarcane workers, and we have the teachers who've had their unions. And especially the bus drivers union, which was the first, which ignited this third wave of unionization I was just talking about, they've been really severely under repression. The leaders have been jailed. The entire union has been basically smashed. All the unionists in that trade union have been fired from their work, and more than half of the sector has been privatized as a kind of a collective punishment. I may add that, you know, February 15th was the International Day of Solidarity with the bus drivers union leader, whose name is Mansour Osanlu. And there's an international campaign by many, many unions in the world, including some American unions, to press the Iranian regime to release him after 2.5 years. He's been in and out of jail many times, and they're really trying to break his spirit, and essentially they want him dead. You know, when you spend 9 months in solitary confinement, you essentially are killing someone. So he really kind of personifies the issue of Iranian labor movement in many ways.
And how does the working class movement juxtapose or interchange with the other sectors of, or does it, groups who are seeking minimally more democratic rights or rights of expression? Again, looking at some of the women in the cultural and writing groups and so on, are they separate and distinct, or is there any kind of coalescence?
First of all, the labor movements kind of diffuse. It's they're not like 2, 3, 4, or even half a dozen federations. We're talking to several small nucleus of unions, like some of which our group works with. And then there are a couple of the bigger ones. But in other words, I cannot speak for the entire labor movement. I could only speak for my own group, which is called the Network of Iranian Labor Unions, NILU. We are completely in support of the democratic movement in Iran, the so-called protest movement or the Green Wave movement, whatever you want to call it, because clearly as long as there is police repression, we cannot organize ourselves and the unorganized. And the most important aim and objective of the protest movement is to put an end to repression. So we feel some kind of a kinship with this movement. Now, whether or not this is some kind of organic relationship between us, the answer is no, because the movement itself, I'm talking about the Green Wave movement, which is in the press, is itself not structured. Because of police repression, we have 3 people on the very top, and the second and third tier people have all been arrested. And then you have millions of people that are in accord with the demands of the leaders. So it's totally spontaneous. You're dealing with tens of thousands of small cells of like-minded people who organize themselves for these protests. And the only means of communication are through these social networkings like Twitter and Facebook or Internet. And that's one reason that the regime hasn't been able to crush it, because they don't know who to pick and who to torture and who to eliminate, thinking that this would put an end to the movement. It's a completely new phenomenon, I think, in the world. It's a very, very amorphous and polaristic kind of a movement. So our activity is exactly like everybody else's. We organize ourselves into cells whenever there are protests, and we go out and cover various places and join the rallies and things of that nature. So I hope that shed some light on your question.
And the role of women.
There's a huge role for women. A good chunk of the working class in Iran are from women. And also, even in the general framework of the democratic movement, if you see some of the footages on TV and some of the pictures, quite a large percentage of those on the streets are women. So this really goes to show that, women, be it in the union, trade union movement, or in the protest movement, are playing quite a huge role right now. This is really encouraging for a place like the Middle East.
You had mentioned also before that some of the labor protests now are a result of the recession and its effect on Iran. How else will the effect of the recession impact on labor struggles and other struggles in Iran?
Well, that's a very good question, Ken. I think major weakness of the protest movement is that it's got a heavy middle class accent. And also, it really doesn't have the kind of muscle to stand up to this regime and force it to give concessions. The muscle could only come when there are mass strikes, and that's when the working class of the country would enter the picture. Now, what we're going to see very soon, it seems like, is that there's going to be huge layoffs in Iran, in the enterprises and factories. It's going to be caused not just by this recession, which has been going on for a while, actually, but because the government of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is going to cut all the state subsidies to the public and to the enterprises. The government pays as much as 20% of its budget for subsidies into staples like food, rice, things like that, into utilities, gasoline, tuition, bus fare. you pay a fraction of these, I mean, compared to the market rate for them. So these are going to be cut after Iranian New Year, which is the end of March. And once that happens, aside from, you know, inflation, of course, you would have huge layoffs. And that's when you're going to see large numbers of working class joining the protests. I think it's going to be quite interesting to see how this thing is going to be developing.
One of the focuses, certainly in the media here, continues to be the Netanyahu government in Israel. Certainly it issued a strike against Syria over its claim of nuclear proliferation there, and it is certainly focused aggressively on Iran. What does that reality do in terms of, is there a solidification of the Iranian people in reference to either the intimidation or the threat of Israel, or for that matter, our government's antagonism to the development of nuclear energy?
This is a complicated issue. What I could say is that things have really changed. There's been a sea change, if you will, after the election. Before the election, you may have heard the average Iranians would say, well, I'm going to defend my government no matter what. But things have kind of changed. Right now, you hear many people say that this government has absolutely no legal right to do the kind of things that it's doing in the region or internationally. At the same time, many people are not calling for outside military attacks because they know this is going to wreak havoc because they've seen the situation in neighboring Iraq. So I would say most people are taking a kind of ambivalent position. They're saying, again, I'm not making this a categorical thing about everyone, but you know, the average kind of Jew in the street, he would or she would tell you that they're against the regime obtaining nuclear power, be it civilian or military, either on philosophical grounds. Some people are saying that nuclear energy is just amoral, or they're saying that this particular regime doesn't deserve to attain it, to acquire it. At the same time, people are horrified at the prospect that there may be an attack on them because this more or less sort of a unpopular government is trying to essentially provoke the foreigners. It seems that more and more as this crisis deepens, we're going to see the Iranian hardline, you know, the hard right, like Ahmadinejad, coming to the conclusion that the only way out of the crisis is a kind of a temporary war, some sort of a engagement with a foreign power that would divert attention from their problems. So we're left with terrible kind of options right now. We have foreign governments that are intent on attacking these installations, and we have a regime that's actually hoping and praying that they attack it, believe it or not. And so in other words, not only the public is definitely against any form of attack, as far as I've seen, they're also not for sanctions either. Not as a principle, because we may reach a point when the labor and the democratic movements would both call for sanctions, as it happened in South Africa. But this is really too early and it's too premature, for the simple reason that once the labor strikes start in a few months, as I was explaining it, the government could turn around and say, look, your problems are not our fault. It's coming from Security Council, United Nations. They're coming from foreigners. They're the ones that are creating all these problems. So it's definitely going to be counterproductive. I'm talking about sanctions, let alone kind of a military attack.
In terms of the government, in terms of the what you said, the hard right wingers, I've heard that many privatizations are taking place and that the Revolutionary Guards basically are profiting from that. What is the motivations of the present government? What drives them?
Well, other than the classical motivations of wealth and power and status, I guess, and fame that drives people to, you know, want to grab what they have and not give it up under any circumstances, you also have the ideological motivation. Some of these people think that they're doing God's work on earth and that it's their role to use coercion to make everybody be good believers, and if they don't listen to them, they have to be punished. And some of them even think that they should basically disseminate this idea around the entire region or maybe around the world. So we're dealing with very powerful motivations for maintaining power.
And to return to the question of privatizations, are they also enriching themselves in the process?
Yes, they're enriching themselves quite fabulously. The choice assets of the economy are being grabbed by the same people who are also beating people up on the streets, and they are repressing workers and are making provocations outside the country. There's a very, very tangible economic benefit that they are enjoying and they're not willing to give up.
I am interested in what you say to people here who are interested in, of course, supporting their sisters and brothers in the working class movement, in the left movement, in the cultural and intellectual movements of resistance to tyranny, to economic repression and depression and so on. What is our job?
I cannot tell you what your job is. I could tell you what my job is. My job is to disseminate what's going on with Iranian labor. And we have a website for that, by the way, which is www.iranlaborreport.com. There's a lot of information about the situation of Iranian labor in general and also some more specific discussions about what may help that movement. I don't particularly think that writing protest letters and demonstrating outside Iran is going to make much of a dent in what this regime is doing. But there are ways of helping, obviously. We're hoping that international labor unions would perhaps try to open dialogue with this regime. Believe it or not, there may be a chance if there is enough international effort. Perhaps some of the labor leaders who are in jail may be released under pressure from labor unions, particularly if they are against foreign intervention in Iran. This may be kind of receptive on the Iranian side. So there are ways of doing it. So I would say inform yourself of what's going on and also see if your unions may be enlisted in this international effort that's underway right now.
And speaking for yourself, although it's perfectly okay to tell us what to do, we tell the world what to do, where we can be humble somewhat and learn. But what are the strategic demands of your umbrella organization?
Our number one objective is to be able to organize the unorganized, which are more than 8 million workers, and they don't have any unions whatsoever. Considering the kind of economic pressure they're under with the recession, just imagine not being able to engage in collective bargaining, in having other workplaces in your country not know what you're doing, and, you know, you feel really isolated and vulnerable if you think nobody else is following your struggles. So we really are focused on trying to organize the labor force. This is our number one objective. And we're definitely, we'd be very happy to hear your input and your suggestions. And it'd be great if you could send us emails, and we definitely pass it around.
We stand in solidarity with our sisters and brothers in the working class in Iran. Thank you very much for joining us and giving us some insights.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'm here to learn from you guys. And hopefully next time I'm here, there'll be a free Iran. And, you know, then you could come and we'll interview in our country.
Yeah, and a free United States.
You stole my line. And a free United States.
But I am curious about the role of Barack Obama. There certainly was an expectation, but there seems to be not much difference in the policies that George W. Bush followed with Iran and Barack Obama. What is actually your perspective on this administration?
I'm not terribly displeased with Obama on Iran. I don't have the expertise to discuss his track record in other areas, but the fact is that what could really kill our movement now is U.S. administration that would come out full force behind the movement, either verbally or actually by, you know, attacking the regime militarily or economically and whatnot. It would be a kiss of death. So whether consciously or unwittingly, the Obama administration has done us a lot of good by not siding with us publicly. This is kind of ironic. And I hope it's not going to change, because I really think the best support that the U.S. administration could give us is no support. So this is my take on it.
We've been talking with Hamayun Pourzad, who is a central council member of the Network of Iranian Labor Unions.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.
buildingbridgesradio.org.